Oh, we're about to get some good audio here.
Sneezing? I don't know. It sounds terrible in the headset anyway, since it's cutting it out.
I don't know why.
Doesn't matter, though. Because it's fine on there.
Yeah.
As long as it's fine on there.
That was loud, though.
Which was loud?
The, you grabbing the
sorry,
microphone.
Sorry,
no, it's fine.
To
I was like,
the mic.
I was looking this way. And
what
does
that sound like?
No, that's fine. He grabbed this piece, like the middle piece that the mic's actually in.
Yeah.
Don't grab the microphone, Mike. Don't be a dick.
Don't make out with the microphone.
Tastes like tapioca. Yeah.
The headset cut right back into being both ears, when he's and then it goes out again, of course, whatever. Anyhow, speaking of headphones.
Yeah.
Comes naturally. We are
Joe.
Mike.
I am Cody. Welcome to this week's episode, everybody.
We should get this 22 input.
22 what the fuck for?
In case we need 22 inputs.
In case we have, I don't know, 18 extra people hanging out.
Oh, people? Yeah, I don't know. We just plugged stuff into it.
Just mic random stuff around the room. Mic
can you get surround sound out of that?
It's still stereo.
Ah, damn it.
Like it would have to be a multi-channel board.
I mean, it's got 22 inputs.
No, that's inputs. It's channels, not inputs.
Yeah, you know. Tomato, tomato.
He doesn't know how that stuff works. He don't know how science works. You can't go beyond infinity, dummy.
Dummy.
Speaking of which, since we didn't talk about it last week.
Yeah.
Right?
We got our first two looks at Toy Story 4.
Yeah.
First was the teaser trailer with, I guess, the new character in it, who's the spoon with the fat with the wire brush.
What are they
arms?
Called? Yeah,
pipe cleaners. Right?
Pipe cleaners. That's what it is. Spork with the weird eyes.
Yeah,
and
with the googly eyes and the pipe
the guy
arms.
Got kindergarten homemade.
Yeah, yeah. And he freaks out and stops the whole like circle running around thing.
Yeah.
And then the second one was one of the greatest things Pixar or Disney has ever done, in my opinion. Which is have Key and or Peele.
Yeah. That's a throwback.
Yeah. Because we used to not know who's who. Because they don't go by their names. They do if you actually watch the show. And that's just mean of us.
Like they literally introduce themselves right away.
As Key and Peele, yeah. But it just goes, oh, this isn't funny yet. But they play two characters, Ducky and Bunny. Which is hilarious because Ducky's the short one, but it's Key, and the tall bunny is Peele, which in real life is the opposite.
Yeah,
which I thought was hilarious. But they do one of their most famous bits slash characters, who are the bellhops from, or the doormen, I should really say.
Yeah,
from their show Key and Peele, where they always talk about movies and that being my jam. And then Liam Neeson's, that sort of that thing, if you've never seen it. And they did that, but to Toy Story, because Toy Story 4 was coming back. So it was like a meta thing where like they were in the world knowing that it existed, but it was them in that universe. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Woody and Buzz come in to talk about it because they're trying to get Buzz Lightyear's catchphrase down, and they keep getting it wrong.
Yeah.
And so they come to correct it. And when he says it, he finally says, to infinity and beyond. Bunny says, man, you can't go beyond infinity. And then the Ducky says, he don't know science. Or something along those lines. Is really funny. But it was one of the funniest, like, just bits. And I can't wait to see them more in the movie. Hopefully they're more in it, more than just maybe like a little bit. A
cameo.
Yeah. Or just make a whole movie of Ducky and Bunny. And I'll be completely and utterly okay with it.
Right.
But anyway, so we didn't talk about too much about that. We don't know anything about the movie just yet, other than the fact that they're making another one. And everybody who's still alive is coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Alive, not like in real life, because Jim Varney, who originally played Slinky, passed away after in between 2 and 3. So a different voice actor played him in...
Farmer Friend.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but Slinky's still in this one because you see him in the trailer or in the teaser. But I thought it was really cool. And I guess we'll probably get a trailer for it closer to next summer, a full length trailer that is. I'd probably say if it's summertime, maybe February, March, probably.
Cool.
So a couple months.
I'm down for that.
Yeah. Looks hilarious so far. The two things they've shown. But pretty funny. Let's see. What else we got? Did you guys watch the Once Upon a Deadpool? teaser trailer?
Nope, never got around
to it. For the PG-13 release in December?
Yes.
First off, A, they did one of the greatest things ever, and they spoofed another classic 80s movie, which is Princess Bride.
Yes.
And they had Fred Savage essentially redo the role of the little kid in the bed, and Deadpool was playing the grandfather,
Columbo,
who was going to read him the story of Deadpool.
Yeah.
And it's cool because it's set up in this like almost exact same room, and he has all these action figures on the headboard, and he's got the posters and stuff, and then it's just really funny. And they don't really show anything really of the movie other than just clips, snippets and stuff, but they make it like it is Princess Bride.
Nice.
It's hilarious. It's everyone refers to it as the Once Upon a Deadpool Savage trailer, because Fred Savage is in it.
Yep.
And it's hilarious the way they essentially are making fun and having fun with the Princess Bride setup. So I thought that was really, really hilarious.
The guy who wrote Princess Bride died this week, too.
He did, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Fucking prolific as shit, dude. I was looking through his IMDb.
Yeah.
Like Butch what? Cassidy and Sundance.
Oh, dude.
He's the writer of the movie, not he wrote the book too, right?
Yeah.
That's
Princess Bride.
Yeah, that's not really anything like the movie was, apparently.
But he wrote the screenplay.
And then he wrote a bunch of stuff.
Damn. Butch Cassidy, Marathon Man, All the President's Men.
Yeah, he did a bunch of, like, not just like a lot of the same. Obviously, those four movies right there, for example, are a drastic different from each other because, well, I mean, just Butch and Sundance and Princess Bride are,
yeah.
I mean, drastically different stories.
Yeah.
You know, and different, just in different genres. So it's pretty interesting that way. But yeah, he's 85?
Something like that. He was in his 80s. He had a good run.
Wow.
Yeah. Way older than I thought he would be for being someone who wrote something like Princess Bride.
Well, apparently he was a novelist.
Yeah.
First, and had some success as a novelist.
Yeah.
But then wrote a screenplay, and then was good at it. Then wrote another one, and then like early on, he wrote Butch and Sundance and sold it for like $400,000, which at the time was a ridiculous amount of money to sell a screenplay for. And then, yeah, he became like the guy in Hollywood for a good screenplay. It was nuts. Like, Bill Simmons from The Ringer, the BS pod that he does, he apparently was really good friends with them. They met about 15 years ago, and they became close friends. And he had some of his friends on talking about him and had great stories and kind of went through his credits, and it was ridiculous the amount of quality shit they're talking about.
Theater unproduced, screenplays produced, screenplays unproduced, television, movies, nonfiction and memoirs, children's books,
William
short
Goldman,
stories.
Right? We should say his name so people know who we're talking about.
Like, he did a lot of stuff.
And, like, very different stuff, which was the most impressive thing. Like, you know, All the President's Men to The Princess Bride.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting to look at that stuff when I looked it up. It was, like, crazy. He was like, for example, like right here, he was a consultant on Good Will Hunting.
Weird.
Yeah.
What was he consulting on?
The story.
He did a lot of script doctoring in the time. So it was he was a guy that people, when they saw like they had something, they'd give it to him, be like, any notes, and he'd go through and just make notes on it. And that's what one of the guys on the Bill Simmons podcast was saying, like, there's hundreds of scripts that he did that to that took no credit for, because he just wanted to help the movies. Mm-hmm. And if they took a credit, they're going to have to pay him a certain percentage. And he knew it was going to be hard.
Right. Because he'd be taking money away from the production.
Yeah. So he did hundreds of scripts, gave them notes, did all kinds of stuff that nobody knows about. Wow. Except for like him and his friends that knew they sent it to him because he didn't want to be credited for it.
Yeah. That's cool. That's really nice of him.
Misery. That's the other one.
Wow, Misery?
Yeah, he wrote the screenplay for Misery.
And Dolores
Claiborne. Which, up until recently, is probably the best Stephen King.
Easily, yeah.
Adaptation.
Yeah. Wow. All right.
Last Action Hero? You script doctor on Last Action Hero? I love that movie. Yeah, man, it's crazy. Yeah. A lot of stuff, man. It was the heck of a stuff. He adapted Misery into a stage play in 2012?
Yeah, with Bruce Willis, right?
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Let me know about that.
Yeah, crazy. Man.
So he's done a lot. And now on to Deadpool.
Keep
it moving, fuckers.
Jesus. Yikes. Deadpool, or Once Upon a Deadpool, is the PG-13 cut of Deadpool 2 with new scenes that were refilmed without all the curse words and blood to try to see if it can do a little better than the sequel did compared to the first movie. Because it didn't perform the way Fox expected it to because of the success of the first one. And the fact that it hit, like, a lot of markets didn't put it on as many screens is because it is a rated R. So this way it'll be more of a in line with the other X-Men movies.
But they did enough refilming and added in stuff. Supposedly it's supposed to be making fun of it the whole way through.
Yeah.
So it's like something that people who
have already seen it
would want to go see it because it's a whole nother movie.
Almost like a satire of itself.
I want to see it.
Which is a super Deadpool thing to do. So it's pretty clever, actually.
Yeah.
Just more money they can rake in, too.
And perfect timing, too, because, like, it's getting in... It hits theaters 2 weeks before the next big superhero film, which is Aquaman does.
Yeah.
And so what Aquaman ended up doing is pushing a week early, almost a week early. What was that?
I don't know.
Oh.
This is your house.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Okay.
They're doing early screenings with AMC through Adam almost a week early for Aquaman, I think, to try to bite into some of that lull they have. You know, I don't know if that's going to work or not, but...
The promotion made me so mad.
Yeah.
Oh, a week early? Sitting there thinking, like, okay, cool.
The Thursday before?
Hopefully, like, the Wednesday, Thursday before... Expecting maybe like the Friday before. No, it's a Saturday before. It's not a week. Unless it comes out on the next Saturday.
Yeah, which right.
Be really weird for a movie. Whatever.
Yeah, man. Whatever. Stupids. But yeah, if you want to go see it 6 days early, you can go see Aquaman.
If you want to go to an AMC theater.
Yeah. It's a promotion through Amazon Bless Prime. You. If you're a Prime member, you can go see it in select theaters built inside of a Whole Foods on Saturday, December 15th, starting at 7 p.m.
Amazon's going to bring back the ideal of them all.
A couple Airheads, or a couple Harkins have picked it up too in our area.
Airheads,
yeah.
He's going to say Arrowhead.
Yeah, because Arrowhead popped up here, and Park West popped up right after it, but. Harkins Arrowhead
Bless you.
Starting on that day too, so it's not just AMC. Before, they only listed here on when I looked at the app before was AMC, so
yeah,
pretty cool. Ooh, Estrella has it. Too bad none of us
Bless you.
Available on a fucking Saturday, huh? You good?
No.
Do you need more?
Maybe.
All right. Thanks for covering with your hand with your you know, but it didn't really. Just made muffled noises through the microphone versus no noises, but...
What am I going to do?
I don't know. Hold it in. Don't die.
Hit the cough button. We're professionals.
Yeah.
Have a cough button.
Yeah.
Just unplugs the mic.
Oh, God. That's worse.
Plugs it back
in. That's worse. It doesn't matter.
We don't have cough buttons.
Nope.
We pour.
I don't even know how to even work those.
You just press it.
No, but like into the thing. Like they've got to be Bless like a thing that goes between this and that, right? I just don't know how it works. Or if this board even supports something like that.
You have to be like in between your mic.
That's what I'm saying, but I don't know if it's something that's going to be done here or
Listen, in between I'll here. Fix it later.
Okay, will you? He'll fix it in post.
We don't have a post.
Nope. Hence the name.
We could, but we don't. Bless you.
Man.
What is this?
It's a sneeze.
It's probably snot.
No.
Oh. I was like, he's looking at his hand. I'm like, I don't know. I can't see it, but I'm going to guess snot, mucus of some sort.
Moving on.
Speaking of mucus.
TJ Miller.
Done them commercials. I didn't have a follow-up to that. I just wanted to say, speaking of mucus.
So bad at those.
Segways are my specialty because I don't do them. There is, let's see, what else happened? The thing I want to talk about, I can't because Mike's here.
Yep.
Because he's a terrible person who got sick and ruined everything and all my plans.
Yep.
A lot of trailers came out this week.
How was, I'm curious, how was Bohemian Rhapsody?
Oh, sore subject.
No, why?
Just kidding.
It's not like it's going to spoil anything. Like, granted, Mike's the only one that's seen it.
No, but I can guess how it ends.
AIDS.
I don't think the movie ends that way, but I was, I mean.
But, you know, ultimately.
Handing out AIDS.
Yeah. Well, if you saw how he got the AIDS, basically they're just handing it out.
well, like, where's the movie start? Like, what point is in the in their career?
Because movie starts with Freddie Mercury seeing Queen before they were Queen when they were called Cody.
They weren't called Cody.
No,
I was wondering what they were called.
I forgot what the name was before, but I figured you would have known.
I do, and you put me on the spot.
They were a popular bar band in wherever the fuck they're from for a while, and their lead singer left to go join another band that was doing bigger shows.
Uh-huh.
And then Freddie Mercury, who was just a fan of them, kind of joined in. And so that's kind of right where it starts.
Wow, damn, I did not know that.
Yeah, so it starts right there, and it quickly goes through, like, he's performing, he's getting better, they're doing bigger shows.
Was it Smile?
Huh?
Was it Smile?
The band?
Might have been. I don't know.
I'm trying to look it up. I just can't. I'm trying to remember it. Go ahead.
Anyways. Yeah. So it goes from there. And then, like, the major plot points are the start, the first record, mm-hmm. how they recorded the first record, up to... And what was cool about this one is they get... And I don't know how accurate it is, but some of your more popular Queen songs, it shows the origin of where they're written.
And that is the kind of the thing that I was hoping for, is that some of the more popular songs.
Yeah, so it kind of shows you how you
have the titular Bohemian Rhapsody where
exactly where it shows from. You kind of where Bohemian Rhapsody will re-roll rock you, which you kind of saw in the trailers.
Yeah.
Best Friend, a couple other ones. So they're like quick little side stops. They kind of show you how those are built up. So yeah, it shows the start, the first record, which they sold their van and a bunch of their shit to record so they could record it their own. Their first record deal, switching companies because the guy wouldn't play Bohemian Rhapsody as their single, wanted to play something else as a single, and didn't like Bohemian Rhapsody.
Wow.
And Queen was really pushing that. So switching companies to, I'm trying to get the timing right. And then it kind of goes to his relationships with his relationship with his wife, him realizing he's gay and being confused about it, and then the drugs and the alcohol kind of come into
mm-hmm.
to play, all the way to Queen essentially breaking up.
Okay.
Him going solo and it not working out, being like the real low point of his professional and personal life. And then the big finale leads to the... what's the name?
Farm Aid,
the big Wembley
concert
that they did. That was like the big crescendo of the movie. So yeah, I kind of followed that. And what I liked about it was I didn't know, because I was kind of going off of like Ray and Walk the Line,
right?
As the two musical docudramas that right. are like really good. Walk the Line and Ray, they focus more on just the character. And they didn't really focus on the music that much. obviously this is a Freddie Mercury movie, but very close behind it, it's a Queen movie. Uh-huh. So you don't really go into detailed stories of other band members, but you get quite a bit of it. You know what's going on with them the whole time.
I'm guessing pretty much everything that affected the band.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, like, Freddie Mercury gets a little bit more.
Right.
But not, like, a whole lot more. So it very much so is a Queen movie, more so than anything else. And, like I said, it hits kind of every marquee point, like the first U.S. tour, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. every big major moment like that. And it also goes to, like, the backlash of, like, when the rumors started coming out that Freddie Mercury was going to all these crazy, wild sex parties and stuff like that. And so all that's covered in there. But like I said, the thing I liked about the most is it gave you cool little background stories on all your favorite Queen songs as you're going through. And it ended in a cool point of that giant concert. And then the last sequence, too. I thought they were just going to go in. The last sequence is almost the fucking performance, dude.
Yeah.
Like, because that performance is only like, what, 22, 25 minutes or something like that?
Yeah.
I don't know if they did the whole thing in the movie, but it felt like they did. But not in a bad way where you're like, ugh.
It was dragging on.
But it was like, holy shit. And I don't know, you probably have seen it, but did Rami Malek, did he sing or did they dub his voice?
I believe he sang.
Yeah,
he fucking killed it.
Yeah,
because that and his. Going again back to Walk the Line and Ray, I think they both won Oscars for that.
I know. I'm pretty sure that did.
I know Ray did for Ray sure. Did,
yeah,
Joaquin Phoenix won it for.
Walk I know the he Line? Got.
I know she did. Right?
She did. I don't know if he did or not for lead. Rami Malek fucking killed it. Like, he became Freddie Mercury. His mannerisms when he was performing, everything was so spot on. Just his hand, like, everything. It was very much so like Ray, like Jamie Foxx did with Ray, where you forgot you're watching Jamie Foxx.
Yeah.
And you're just like, that's Ray Charles.
Yeah.
This is the same thing. It's not Rami Malek. That's fucking Freddie Mercury.
Where did they find this footage?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was really, really cool.
It was not him.
It was not him? Okay, yeah. No. I didn't think so.
Mark Martel, Martel and archive vocal recordings of Freddie were the
lead. That's what I thought, because it was like too perfect.
Okay.
But they also go into how, because Freddie Mercury had that crazy overbite.
Yes.
And they made it a point of reference that because of those extra teeth that gave him that overbite, he had more vocal range than most people do. That's why he was able to perform some of the things that he could.
Right, it was a big thing about him not getting his teeth fixed because he was worried it would
change his voice. Yeah, he was worried he would change his voice. Even if he didn't sing, like, just the way he performed everything was so good. And then the outside, the in-between moments, dealing with personal life, dealing with his family and stuff like that, and then dealing with having AIDS and not wanting it to become public because he just wanted to perform with the band one more time. It was really, really good. Definitely worth a watch.
That's cool. I do plan on watching it, probably just not in theaters.
Yeah, you know, it's not a have to watch in theaters one.
I think the live
it wasn't in Cine One.
Cool to see, like, on the big screen like that.
Yeah,
but I think that's the only thing I would really imagine.
The weird, and it's not even a knock, but you could tell they used footage from the concert for the crowd for the wide shots.
Yeah,
so it looked weird at times
because of older versus newer.
Yeah, but it was still pretty cool.
I haven't seen it, obviously, like we said earlier, but I do know a couple behind the scenes tidbits.
Oh, hit me.
Because I watched a lot of interviews with Remy leading up to it. So a couple things. One is he was very nervous when he got the role because he didn't know how he was going to portray Freddie. Obviously they knew he could do it because they hired him for it. But once they gave him the teeth and they were in, he felt himself transform, and he started to, after watching all these footage of interviews with him and all these things and performances, he started to sit more upright and hold himself differently just to make him feel more like he belonged in that space, which I thought was pretty cool. But the other thing, too, is the very first thing they shot was the farm aid footage.
Wow.
So the very first thing he had to perform was that performance.
Wow. Wow.
And that's a lot of pressure. The director...
That's a crazy long scene, dude.
Yeah, right? They want to do that because if they couldn't get... The whole thing was if they couldn't nail that scene, they couldn't do anything else. They knew that,
makes sense.
If they couldn't get this proper, even not even like good enough, if they couldn't get it to be what it needed to be, because there's you can watch that actual farm aid performance of that whole thing, the whole 21 or 22 minutes or whatever it is. You can watch it on YouTube and stuff like that. You can watch individual performances too. But you can watch everything as of him walking out on stage and the slowly him just going from standing up front to moving around the stage to then sitting at the piano and all of that. You can watch the whole thing. And so the director had them all sit down and watch it individually as well as together and literally memorize what it looked like so they could redo it without having to say, oh, we're just going to do this instead. They wanted it almost shot for shot to look like the farm age footage does. You can watch currently anywhere in there. So it felt like you weren't just watching a movie, you're watching a documentary about Queen in a way, you know what I mean? So I thought it was pretty cool.
No, that is really cool. Especially since they could have just used the stock footage that they had.
Right, yeah, easily. There. Especially because it was at the easily. End of the movie, they could have just been like, bloop, here it goes.
Yeah, and just play it off like that.
Yep. But how can you imagine your first day on set of any movie?
It makes sense, though, because with as hard as that scene is, it makes the rest of the performances pretty easy.
Yeah.
Because the rest of the performances in the movie, you're getting bits and pieces of it.
And even...
They don't have to be so choreographed as well, I'm guessing.
Right, because nothing else is really a big monumental moment. You know what I mean? It's like... There's like clips of them performing in bars and a couple big stadiums, but it's not that. That was ridiculously long and detailed. And the other thing, too, I wanted to say, the comedy in the movie throughout is really well done,
really?
Too. Yeah, there's a lot of really good, funny moments in it.
I wouldn't have thought that. It feels like something that would have just fallen more towards the dramatic end.
Nah, it's much more lighthearted than you would think going in.
Well, that's good.
Mainly because Freddie Mercury is such an character. Odd character.
I suppose he is. I've seen one interview that he did with some British tabloid. Was it tabloid or newspaper? Yeah, where he was...
Britain did the same thing.
Yeah, he had some good good sarcasm to him.
Yeah,
so... And then, like I said, I've read that some of the things aren't super historically accurate, obviously, and I wasn't really expecting it to be. And I've read that like they sugarcoated some things and made everyone seem like they got along better than they did.
Uh-huh.
But in any way, just in terms of entertainment value, it was good. It was really cool.
Cool.
Yeah. I was going to say, like when I said director, it's Bryan Singer, who is credited as the director, even though he didn't finish the editing portion of it. But he's the one that really kind of spearheaded the way that they wanted to make the movie and then make it and how it would feel again more like you're watching a documentary than you are a biopic type movie. And again, they wanted to focus more on the band Queen.
Yeah.
And the entity that was versus just focusing. Because obviously, if you say, oh, Queen, the band Queen to somebody, most people will automatically think Freddie Mercury versus Brian May or like Tim and like that. Like, they won't go into those. Like, they won't automatically say, oh, yeah, Brian May's band. Like, no one's going to say that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, that's just how it ends up being. But yeah, you know, pretty cool looking everything. And the fact that, like, great choice choosing to end the movie on the farm aid, because that shit was just... It's still touted as one of the best live rock performances ever done by any band ever.
Yeah.
And that's not just by, like, people who either were there or have seen it. That's, like, by musicians and, like, critics and stuff. Like, they... And a lot of people who, especially music historians, know that the rocky turmoil that the band was in at that point, it like changed the band to be better than they were before. Because they, like Mike said, like it was coming off the heel of Freddie going solo without the want to go solo. He wanted to do something else different than the Queen, but he still wanted Queen to be a thing. But Brian May and Roger, they really butted heads with it. They're like, we want to stay Queen. We don't want you to do anything else. And like Mike knows that, I don't know how much, again, they went in the movie about it, but that was the big point where like essentially Queen just broke down. And like years passed when he was trying to get a solo career going. And he even said, like Mike was saying, I don't know if he said it now, or I know he was talking earlier about it before, that like he even knew it was a mistake. And he tried to make it work, but it wasn't the same magic as it was the four of them.
Yeah, in the movie, there's a pivotal scene where he's kind of apologizing to the guys when they're trying to get the benefit concert going, is he says that CBS gave me all this money and all these people, and I told them exactly what to do, and they did it, and it sucked because I didn't have you telling me no, that was wrong. I didn't have you chiming in with this riff. I didn't, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. And he's like, it wasn't surrounded Queen.
By yes men.
Yeah, because there's actually a moment earlier in the movie where, when Freddie's getting all big headed and he takes the solo deal and he tells everyone like, you guys need me, and the guys in the band tell him, you need us more than you realize. And you see that too going back, like a lot of the good ideas aren't just Freddy's, it's everybody has cool things to yeah. join in that really changes the complexion of some of your favorite Queen songs. And the other thing is, I didn't realize how much like each of the band members wrote different songs. Like I never really
much thought into it. Yeah, like, never ask me who wrote all the Queen songs. I'd be like Freddie Mercury.
No, not even. Yeah.
He did a lot of the vocals, but after the fact, I know that. Like, but most of the music was Roger and well,
that's what
Brian.
I'm saying is that you don't like.
If I'm not mistaken, right?
Like, the drummer. I'm a Queen fan. I like a lot of their stuff, but I don't know all the band names, and I don't really know their history. So that's what I'm saying is you would say who wrote all the music, Freddie Mercury.
And another thing that it made me realize after watching it is Queen is my favorite band without hesitation. You ask me who's your favorite band of all time, I'm going to say Queen.
Yeah, you will.
But I realized that like, you can get most of Queen's songs off of a couple different greatest hits collections.
Yeah.
And that's mainly what I listen to.
Yes.
And I realize I've never really listened to their whole discography. Sorry, can't say words right now. Start to finish. And I was like, fuck, I need to do that. Like, I'm missing that portion of that. So since then, I started going back and listening start to finish of whole albums. And it's crazy how much the feel and tone and actual storytelling that they're doing with each album is. It's like, oh yeah, that's, you forget, but this is how you're supposed to listen to those.
Yeah,
not just it's supposed to be songs. In the middle of this song and this song, and there's a reason they do that, and there's a reason it's spaced the way it is. And yeah, if you go back and you listen to start to finish albums, it's crazy. And then you forget, looking at the fucking release dates on them, how far ahead of their time they were.
Oh yeah?
Like, ridiculous. Like, a lot of their music could come out today and people are like, god damn, that's a good song. You know that's what I mean? True. Like, yeah. Nothing about it is dated. You have weird futuristic like experimental songs and stuff like that, but I don't really feel like the majority of their music is dated. I feel like it's evergreen. You could release that shit right now. Like, if they had some secret recordings like Tupac style that nobody knew about, mm-hmm. and just put them out, people think, did they just write that? You know what I mean?
Right, or has it been there the whole time? Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. That is something that that I think I've been guilty of too. Like, I mostly listen to their songs that everybody knows.
Yeah.
And I've never really listened to all the other stuff. So is all their stuff on iTunes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is? So I guess I'll, yeah. that's one thing.
It made
I'll
it really easy.
Too. Well, it's I'll have to go back and just like Mike said.
I just Googled search release date.
Yeah.
Things and
just start from there.
Yeah, just started from there.
All right. I guess I know what I'll be doing in a few minutes here.
Masturbating.
Yeah.
No.
To I'm Queen songs.
No. Speaking of which, do they, because one of my favorite songs from Queen, actually probably is my favorite song from the Queen, is Under Pressure. Do they do that in
No, the they actually didn't go into any David Bowie stuff.
That's
That was a weird thing too. I was kind of expecting that, but I don't know if what the rights would be. That'd be kind
of
weird,
right? Because you do have the Bowie section of it, and that's what I was. That's exactly what I was wondering. Yeah, they didn't get into any of that. That sucks, but I understand. What is your favorite Queen song?
Mine?
Yeah.
You're My Best Friend.
You're My Best Friend?
Yeah.
Very solid. Every time I listen to that song, it takes me back to that fucking, was it Super Smash Brothers? Melee or something commercial?
Oh, from back in the day?
My best. Yeah. And they start fighting each other. It's fucking hilarious.
Forgot about that.
What's your favorite Queen song, Cody?
I mean, Bohemian Rhapsody is just fucking amazing.
It is. Cody's going to go off the rails here. Hold on. Wait.
Oh, I'm sorry. He asked me which my favorite is.
Radio Gaga?
Just starts.
I do. So Radio there's Gaga. A lot. Like, Radio Gaga is one of my favorites.
It's a very poppy
Fat
song.
Fat Bottom Girls.
Is a good one.
Is a great one. I think Bicycle is probably my favorite.
It's so fucking weird.
It's my favorite song, though. But it's so, that song is so actually super complex.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of stupid.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, when you hear on the radio, it kind of makes me mad because, like, if you do hear on the radio, not that many rock stations play Queen unless it's classic rock, and those stations don't last very long. Mm-hmm. You just don't, you can't get the same feel for it. I'm not going to be one of those people, you're going to listen to it on vinyl. But if you listen to it where you can have it at a really good volume through headphones or whatever, you'll hear the actual real complexity that you're listening is that. To
the complexity of the actual instrumental play.
Yeah.
But also getting the actual meaning of the song.
Yep.
Because it's not just about bicycles.
It's not. No. Not so whatsoever.
But I will say, like, that realization, like, when I was a kid and you hearing that song, it's like, man, that's really weird that he's just singing about how much he loves his fucking bicycle.
Yeah.
And more as an adult, you realize that it's not that.
Oh, and another thing, too. This was so fucking annoying. In the movie, there's the first time a dude kisses him.
Uh-huh.
Right? But you know, it's Freddie Mercury.
Yeah, you go into knew he was gay.
Wait, what?
I heard a ugh behind us. I was like, really, dude?
That's the kind of person who doesn't know what the movie is they're going to go watch.
Yeah.
They're just like, oh, I saw commercials for this. All right, cool. You know, or they're one of those people who's goes.
Do they go into it going, "Oh, Queen, I love that band," and then find out about that stuff?
No, because there's this whole subset of people who will just go see movies. They don't know. They don't watch trailers. They don't see any other than trailers they see before a movie plays. But they just go to a theater and they're like, "I'm going to see this because it starts in 10 minutes," and they'll see a movie. And that's those people who just like they go and they watch this movie. They really? Don't. Yeah, yeah, it happens all the time.
I don't. Okay.
It makes no sense if you actually are a fully functioning brain person. Like if both sides of your brain are like, hey, I'm functional, right? You don't have this. Or, like, why would you just go and just guess on a movie?
Just go to a movie.
Like, I love movies, right? But I go with intent.
Yeah,
I'm going to go see this movie, you know what I mean? I'll take chances on movies. I've seen plenty of terrible movies in the theater.
Yeah, we have.
But I don't just walk up the theater and get a ticket and go, all right, starting in 10 minutes is Bohemian Rhapsody. I don't know what that is, but I'm going to go see it. You know what I mean? Like, that's the kind of people. But those are the people who aren't in touch with the actual pop culture. They just go see movies.
Hmm.
And it's very bizarre to me, but I've been in those experiences where, like, I've gone to see a movie that has something that's taboo in a way, you know, like a guy kissing a guy type thing, and I've seen people leave in disgust.
Really?
Yeah. And I've seen it happen, and it's like, what?
What did you think you came in here for?
Yeah, like, what, like especially something like Bohemian Rhapsody that is so much so steeped in history.
Yeah.
Like, they named the movie Bohemian Rhapsody because it's the most famous song by Queen, yeah, by far. the most famous of any of their songs, be it your favorite or not, it is the most famous song by them. Even like there's things where people just quote it in general, for no reason. You know what I mean? And going into something like that, not knowing anything about it, and like being shocked. Oh, he kissed a man. Like, what? How do you not know this?
Did a whole lot more than that to a man.
They
did.
They hung out. If you know what I mean. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, dicks. Did I mess it up again? I'm not supposed to wink, wink again?
Yeah, if you say dicks, it...
Yeah, but this is audio.
That's true.
See, they couldn't see me wink, wink.
Yeah. Dicks.
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 Is that better? Mike's like, no. Again, audio, it doesn't matter. To answer your question, though, for Under Pressure it's actually does have parts written by David Bowie. He's credited as being a songwriter on it,
as well as a producer. Because it is always
it's Queen Under Pressure and David Bowie.
Queen and David Bowie.
So it's not like Queen featuring David Bowie. It's Queen and David Bowie, because I was trying to see if I remember correctly, and I could be wrong. It doesn't say on here. The two parts, so the way this song came about is they met at a concert somewhere. David Bowie was very intrigued by them as a band and a group, and he came to them and he wanted to do something together, and he had a song he didn't finish, which was the basis of Under Pressure. Uh-huh. And then they wrote everything together. They basically took that as like the mold and built everything around it. If I remember correctly, I could be wrong about that. It could be a different song, but
if it is that, it's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, because like, so well,
did
a
they
lot
do
of the
any
lyrics
other songs together.
No, that's the only one I know of they did together. But if I'm mistaken, the core vocals and theme of the song was David Bowie solely, and then they added to it, and then they wrote the music together. Which, if you listen to it, obviously sounds like a Queen song, and sounds most likely nothing like a David Bowie song for the most part.
It doesn't really.
And that's why it's Queen and David Bowie, I think, versus David Bowie and Queen.
Because it does feature Queen more heavily. Like, just listening to the vocals, you're like... Because I know that one of the first times that I listened to it, like, you know, it's a fantastic song. It sounds like a Queen song, and then you're like, oh, David Bowie's also in it. Is he? Where?
Yeah, you have to pay attention, because it's not like the song doesn't change enough. It's just the vocal.
Yeah.
The vocals change. But I mean, you could even say like, oh, that's just a background if you don't know who David Bowie is.
Exactly. And back in the day, that was exactly it. It sounded exactly like a Queen song. And then you're like, oh, David Bowie's in it. And you're like, oh, that's who that is. That's also there. Yeah.
Oh, here's right here. So it says Queen had been working on a song titled Feel Like, but was not satisfied with the result. David Bowie had originally come to Mountain Studios to sing backup vocals on another Queen song called Cool Cat, but his vocals were removed from the final song because he was not satisfied with his performance. Once he got there, they worked together and wrote the song. So it was originally something based on the song that Queen was making, and then they added in what he brought to it and evolved into a jam session that turned into the song itself.
Nice.
So I had it backwards. It was a song that Queen was working on they couldn't get properly, and then after working with him on another song and he didn't feel right about it, they then stuck together to then work on it. That's what it was. I knew I'd read about it before. I had to find it, though.
Nice.
So, but it's good times. Good times. What else, Mike? What we got? Ton of trailers dropped in the last week or so that neither of you have watched?
Nope. Yeah.
I know that for a fact.
Well, we did watch the new Mortal Engines trailer.
We did not.
Didn't?
That's the original. That was the first full length one. Oh, yeah. Okay, there's another new one after that.
Never mind then. Cancel that.
Otherwise, there's not a whole lot of new news to go over.
We already got we went over the Venom 2.
Yeah, Venom 2. We don't know anything about it. We just know it's coming out.
Yeah, just that it's coming out in 2020.
Along with another Spider-Man universe movie that's not actual Spider-Man movie.
Yeah.
Which everyone thinks is a sequel to Into the Spider-Verse. one.
We're not going to spoil Fantastic Beasts for Mike.
So much.
It was one more week, and we'll talk
about
it.
I will say one thing that's not a spoiler for it that I didn't know about until after the movie, and maybe Cody did, is that the kid who plays Grindelwald, young Grindelwald,
mm-hmm.
was in Deathly Hallows Part 1.
Yes.
I did not know that. He played a picture of Grindelwald as he was young.
Yeah.
And so like, that just blew my fucking mind.
They brought him back
That was 2010.
Yeah.
That Deathly Hallows came out. Now fast forward to, 2018, and there he is again. That's some fucking foresight, man.
Yeah. And it's crazy because, after seeing it, I can't go back and find a book to read about it because it was written as a movie versus the other Harry Potter movies.
Were written
as books first. Like, so the Fantastic Beasts, you can go and buy the book Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, but all it is a book written to be like the textbook that Newt wrote for it. Like that's where the idea for it came from. Then it was J.K. Rowling who then took that and spun the tale of essentially not really so much the making of the book, but the events that happened when he was writing the book and the stuff that happened around him. And then same thing with the Crimes of Grindelwald was little things that were mentioned in the books/movies of the Harry Potter ones that then she expended on and got it. And I need to finish reading the books because apparently there's a whole lot of backstory that you get on Dumbledore and his family that you don't get in the movies.
Right.
Because even as Joe and I were driving home from the theater, I was looking up on the... Because
there was still confusion between us, who his brother was. And,
yeah, all that stuff, right? Like, there's all this, these things that were brought up that you kind of... They kind of, almost expect you to know.
They make mention about he has a sister, and you're like...
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. And Dumbledore has a brother because he works at Hogsmeade in the town just south of the school.
Yeah.
And he plays a big part in the Deathly Hallows stuff. But you don't know the backstory. And there's so much to the backstory that I didn't know, the fact that, Albus Dumbledore and his brother, whose name I'm forgetting right now.
Frank.
Nope. I do believe it starts with an F, though.
Frank Dumbledore.
Franklin.
Franklin Dumbledore. That's the one. They have this tension between them, and that's one of the reasons you never see them together.
Uh-huh.
Like in the movies, I guess, and maybe say even the books. And that reading through the history of it, and maybe we'll learn more about it in the next movie. I found out that it's all because Dumbledore was Grindelwald's lead partner in what he was trying to do. And then he saw the error of his ways. But before that, and the reason that led to that, is Dumbledore, Albus, and Grindelwald got in a duel, a three-way duel, with his younger brother. And in that duel, a curse was thrown, reflected by his brother to save his own life, and it hit their sister, killing her.
Uh-huh.
And so that's what basically drove a wedge between Albus and Grindelwald, but you don't get any of that, as far as I know, in any of the movies.
Nothing I remember.
So, it's really bizarre. There's this huge amount of history that is known, but isn't known if you're a casual fan, but plays a really heavy toll into if you not knowing what I know now from the movie, and now knowing that adds a whole lot more weight to the decisions made by certain people.
Yeah.
In the movie. And it was crazy to think about. Finding out that Dumbledore's dad was actually was imprisoned in Azkaban and died there.
Yep.
And he was in prison because he attacked muggles who were beating or bullying his daughter. And then I don't know what he ended up dying of in Azkaban, other than maybe just dying. And the fact that his Dumbledore's mom died because his sister, who because of the bullying she got, refused to use her magic abilities and became unstable and had an outburst, which then killed their mother. And then a few years later, because Dumbledore's dad was in prison, he had to run the family and his in enough time because his brother was in schooling, his younger brother, so he could finish schooling, and they were at odds because of that. It was, it's crazy how much is how much more complicated that whole thing is, other than the fact that you get some of that, like, the littlest of detail in this movie, even though Dumbledore's very prevalent in this movie and very important to the story itself. You don't get any of that in the movie.
No, not at all.
It's crazy. And I did a, I mean, I was reading all sorts of stuff, like crazy.
You went things. Down the rabbit hole.
Dude, I went down the Potter hole, bro. Like, I was deep, deep
in deep in hole. The Potter's deep hole.
Yeah.
In the Potter's hole.
Yep. Deep in that hole.
Hope Brandon doesn't listen to this episode.
Yeah, he's fine. But yeah, so that was pretty crazy to me.
Did you guys all see what they tacked on to the title of the Birds of Prey movie?
So upset about this fucking title.
What is it?
It is called Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
Michael loved the was it a Twitter post? Yeah, Twitter post of Margot Robbie. She took a picture of the script page.
Where she hand wrote the title once they were giving it to him. Everyone thought that was her joke, and then it was revealed by the producers and the director that's the movie, that's the name of the movie.
Yep.
And she had handwritten it so nice that they let her post that picture online to debut the title of it.
I am a supporter of letting Margot Robbie do whatever she wants. So.
This is true.
It's absolutely true. I mean, it's fine.
What are your reservations about it?
It's just a very. Like, I just think it's a
very convoluted title.
It's a very convoluted title, but I just think because of that name, they're gonna focus more on Harley Quinn than the actual team of Birds of Prey.
Yeah,
and the fact that the Birds of Prey is more of the title of the Batman half of it, but they're having other. I think if I remember reading correctly, it's gonna have more focus of villains in it teaming up.
Right. This is more of like a Suicide Squad type.
Yeah.
Thing.
Yeah, so it's very than more of a Batman-centric thing.
Yes.
But, I mean, whatever. They're going to do what they need to.
But, fuck it, Margot Robbie, so I'm going to watch it.
I mean, I haven't not watched them yet, so. It's true.
And I know I'm in the minority, but I've been pleasantly surprised by most of them, so. A lot of people hate all the DC movies.
I did not read this cast. Robbie obviously reprises her role as Harley Quinn.
Spoiler alerts, man.
Journey Smollett Bell as Black Canary. Mary Elizabeth Winstead as Huntress. Rosie Perez as Detective Renee Montoya.
Damn.
I didn't know
Rosie Perez in that shit.
Ella J. Bosco as Cassandra Cain or future Batgirl, as they called her here. But this is the big one, Ewan McGregor as Black Mask.
That was announced a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. I was like, well, that's...
I like that.
You fucking... Yeah, like...
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
The one thing I will have to say this about this movie, and I need to make sure I'm correct on this. So forgive me while I'm typing here. If I'm not mistaken, the person who wrote this screenplay, whose name is Christina Hodson...
Yeah, by Christina Hodson.
Is the one that did. She was originally signed up to do. Yeah, she would. I was. Yeah. So she was originally set to do the script for the Barbara Gordon Batgirl film that was originally going to be done by Joss Whedon.
Okay.
But he wanted to change too many things. And so it ended up not happening.
Such a Joss Whedon thing.
Yeah. Because, you know, he likes to take control of stuff that's not his. Just go make Firefly stuff. Make everyone happy. But so the screenwriter, she wrote the screenplay for Bumblebee, as well as Unforgettable and the movie Shut In, which if you guys don't remember, those doesn't really shock me at all because they weren't big movies.
The last two, I don't, yeah.
But Unforgettable is the one with Katherine Heigl where she's obsessed with her ex. And supposedly she kills the the new girlfriend or new wife or whatever. And then Shut In is another one, but it was one from a couple years ago, 2016, with Naomi Watts and Oliver Platt, where she has a kid who's like troubled and seeing weird things or obsessed. I don't remember what it was, but fairly low key popular movie.
Okay.
Unforgettable apparently was a pretty terrible movie, but I don't think that's her fault. I guess it was that.
I almost say it was the movie. Pretty forgettable.
Did not live up to its title.
I like that.
So yeah, so I thought that was pretty interesting. She's fairly new into the realm, and she's already getting fairly large projects right after. I mean, Bumblebee is a, if anything, a tentpole movie in a franchise that's trying
There's
to reboot
itself. There's a lot of good buzz around that.
Yeah. Buzz. Get it? See what you did there?
I see what you did there.
Bumblebee. Like buzz, because they're robots, and they make noises. Right? Is that what you're getting at?
No.
No.
Oh. Because they're from space?
Yep. Okay. That's it.
Oh, okay.
And then obviously Birds of Prey.
Yep.
A lot of adaption news coming up in the last week, too, of all sorts of stuff. George R. R. Martin has yet another adaptation of a book that he's done in the past with the Wild Card stuff.
Yeah,
earlier this year they announced that they're going forward with they greenlit at least one season of the prequel to Game of Thrones. That's supposed to happen. That's supposed to go in production once the final season of Game of Thrones is wrapped. You have. A bunch of comic books, one that have been recently done. It's kind of crazy, like how much stuff is getting gobbled up right now. But like, not just like the Wild Cards one from George R. R. Martin is Hulu, and then on the cusp of that being announced, Sci-Fi releases a bunch of trailers for Night Flyers, which actually starts the first week of December on Sci-Fi, which is based on a short story that George R. R. Martin did about a crazy. Space thing where like people are murdering each other or some nonsense. I don't know. I haven't read it, but it looks fucking fantastic and spooky. And hopefully they don't try to drag on and just make a good amount of them.
Good, make something good and concise. Unfortunately, yeah. I don't think that's going to happen. Not, Sci-Fi is going to want to stretch it out as much as they can, and as soon as shit. They stop making money off of it,
they'll just dump it.
The expanse.
Or once it outweighs, like once it costs too much to make versus what they're actually getting from it, then it will definitely. Right. Be dumped. Like, nope. I guess over $1 million an episode is not worth it. Even though you have a fucking furious fan base that, like, just gobbles up anything you give them.
Yeah.
But, whatever. I think that might be it.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'll be it for this week, everybody. But yeah, so comes actually, we are
Joe,
Mike,
I'm Cody. That's it. With the sixth episode, everybody. And as usual, you fuckers just came naturally.